Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we're going to talk about some news, after which we're going to be joined by an illustrious guest and do a chapter pack review. And at the end, we will be doing some closing comments and talk about some upcoming tournaments.
All right, John, this is episode 2. It's been a long time since we've had an episode 2.
Yeah, it's almost a year. But it's not that long since we've had an episode, which is what really counts.
Today's intro is going to be super short. Our intro last week was so long, people were bored, so we're kind of cutting down. It's also our first time trying to fit a chapter pack review in a regular episode with additional formatting, so we got to keep it pretty tight. But normally we'd talk about some of the results of the tournament over the weekend, but unfortunately, because I'm traveling all weekend, we've had to do all our recording before the weekend. So if there were big tournaments, and in fact there were, I think there was a tournament in Boston.
Yep, one here in Ottawa.
And the big No Restricted List tournament in the UK will all have happened. So hopefully those details we can discuss with you guys in the news next week.
We're joined today by someone that I'm sure everyone knows, because I believe you were the top female player at Worlds last year, weren't you, Lauren?
Yeah.
You came in 6th, I think, overall in the Joust, playing your favorite house, is that right?
Yep, I was playing a Baratheon Dark Words deck at Worlds. And Alex kept me from being 5th place.
Well, I'm still really glad to have taken 5th place. It meant a lot to me, so I don't feel in the slightest bit guilty.
Yeah. That's okay. I was pretty happy with 6th at my first world. So.
Lauren's joining us today to actually do our chapter pack review. So the new chapter pack is out. It's the second in the expansion set. What's the name of the pack again? Does anyone remember?
Yeah, the pack is A Deadly Game. Mm-hmm. And it was record fast in getting to stores.
Yeah, the space between the two chapter packs was very short.
Yeah, it's almost like they just kept the delivery date of this chapter pack, regardless of what happened with the
previous
last
one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Lauren, would you care to start us off with the first Barra card, given your expertise in that field?
Sure. So we're taking a look at Brienne of Tarth. She's a 2-cost, 3-strength character, military icon. Rainbow Guard and Lady traits. She's also considered to have the Knight trait, which is really interesting. I don't think we've seen any cards with that before. She has a War Crest and limited response after Brienne of Tarth kneels. Each opponent may move one power to your house card. Any opponent who cannot do this cannot play event cards this round.
Are you guys going to use this card?
You know, it's an interesting card, and I think if it wasn't called Brienne of Tarth, it would be a no-brainer. But with the current dual house Brienne being so good and probably being, you know, an auto include in most Baratheon decks, is kind of a tough one. But she has some nice synergy with a few cards that are already out there. Like Prized Renly is one that I was thinking of. You know, you kneel her in marshalling to discount the marshalling cost of a card, and now your opponent can't play events for the rest of the round.
Yeah, I was thinking of Renly and Muster as being the two things I could potentially use to kneel her regularly. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could give her a rest or to kneel her for other reasons and stuff, but as is, basically it's either the Muster or the Renly interaction.
Yeah, that's right. The easiest. Right. It's for the whole round, which makes it really powerful.
And it's not competing with any meaningful limited response in Barra.
No.
Yeah.
This is actually the card of all of them that I think is the most interesting and the one that I spent the most time thinking about. I'm still not sure how often it'll replace the other Brienne, and I don't think it will often prevent your opponent from playing an event he wants to, but gaining power for that anyway and getting that information, so you kneel the card and he gives you the power, you know he's going to play an event and that already tells you something. Or you kneel the card and you don't get a power and then you have the peace of mind of knowing your opponent's not going to play an event. Both of those are actually very, very useful information to have. So I think for that information and the fact that she's a two cost, and as we were mentioning last week, it's kind of hard to fit three costs in Aloof and Apart. I actually think this Brienne will see play.
Yeah,
I think she'll see a bunch of play. In Melee, she's awesome.
Yeah, she's your opponent. So. Yeah.
But it also, like this Rainbow Guard trait, we've seen some synergy, so maybe as this series finishes off, there might be even more synergy with that, and that might be a reason to play her as well.
I'm skeptical of them. I mean, I think this cycle is going to be hard to evaluate because it's trying to make underplayed themes like the Clansmen and so on playable, and it's going to be really hard to judge when it hits that tipping point, if it hits that tipping point. But with something new like Rainbow Guard, I don't think it's going to
might ever make it, yeah.
Yeah, that's my feeling for it. But yeah, this is the card I really think deserves the most consideration in this chapter pack as being really interesting, occasionally having a niche, you know. Also, that considered to have the knight trait, is that just a Nedley nod because she's not actually a knight? Is that because they didn't have room on the card? Or is that because they want fortified position and Milk of the Poppy to make her not a knight?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I don't think any of us can answer that. I definitely like her, though. I mean, I think she'll see some play in some Joust decks.
Yeah.
She's amazing early game. Yeah. Aloof and Apart in early game. Like, you play her round one, and it's awesome.
All right, well, John, want to give us the next card?
Sure. Offer of a Peach. It's event, Baratheon only. It's another limited response, which is cool theme. After you win, Dominance, choose up to X standing characters to claim one power for each. X is the number of plot cards in your used pile. It's kind of like a delayed rush for Baratheon. Not something that Baratheon's really known for right now, you know, waiting four turns or five turns before claiming a whole bunch of power, but it's definitely interesting.
No, it's not.
No, it is interesting. It's not good, though.
Okay. I think it has several too many restrictions. If it was just a regular response, maybe you could build some gimmicky deck where you're going to play it twice on turn six and get 10 power or something like that. Otherwise, just having to have the standing characters and the fact that you're only going to trigger it once, and usually it's going to be worse than a make an example, which you're not playing in Joust anyway. This card is basically binder fodder. I don't see it ever seeing play.
Yeah, it's definitely very restricted as to when you can trigger it. The only scenario I could really see this happening in would be some kind of Holy Rush deck where you have a Power of Faith turn and you have a lot of characters standing.
And even then, is the Power of Faith turn going to be on turn 5 or 6?
Otherwise, you're better just running.
On turn 4, you're better off using Make an Example. Exactly.
Make an Example, yeah. That's tough. I don't think it's going to see any decks. You'd have to have, well, maybe something with a plot cycling. So, Alex, you planned this.
Yeah, I planned this to go straight to Greyjoy. I always do. So, this next card is Warrior of Note. It's a 3-cost, 2-strength military power bicon with Deadly, Renown, the Ironborn trait, and a Warcrest. He's also the only card with flavor text in this entire chapter pack, which is weird.
That is weird.
It's not a great card because it's directly comparable to things like the Iron Fleet Captain, who has stealth and basically a sort of pseudo-renown. And so in many ways they work similarly. But I think the difference for this one is the Warcrest, and I think that actually matters here in Greyjoy. The deck that I would use this in would probably be something like an LIV2, a heavy aggro one, where I'm using things like Price of War and Die by the Sword, and there that Warcrest really does make a difference. The last version I tried to build was really scraping for Warcrests, using the Warcrest Asha, using the Warcrest Theon, and I'm really happy to see that. I also think Renown is very, very rare in Greyjoy, so it's always something to keep an eye on, because anything that will properly accelerate Greyjoy makes their drawback of having bad draw less important. So most decks can't slot in a 3-for-2. The ones that are going to make use of that Warcrest are going to enjoy this character.
I guess the Deadly makes it more likely that you'd win an unopposed challenge and actually get that Renown, and kind of makes up for the 2 strengths in a way.
I think you said it all.
I'm still not convinced it's a good card.
All right.
Okay, so we're taking a look at, is it Thunderer? So this is a unique Greyjoy location. It's 2 cost. It has the trait Worship and a limited response. After an opponent reveals a plot card, kneel Thunderer to choose an opponent and discard the top card of his or her deck. If that card is a character or location, draw 1 card. So it's another card for the mill archetype, which we've seen a couple of new cards for recently. Doesn't have too much competition in Greyjoy with the limited response, just a few of the new cards that have come out. I'm not sure that it's going to find a spot even in the mill decks. It's nice that it's got the sort of unconditional mill, but it doesn't have a lot else going for it.
It's got draw.
Yeah, maybe.
Character or location, that's probably like
more than 60, I would imagine.
More than 60, yeah.
Still, 2 cost for conditional draw. It eats up limited response, which matters for, I guess, the first mage right now. I thought the most interesting thing about this card was it's the first unique warship that isn't called Longship something or else. It's just called Thunder, which I like, actually. I hope that that 2.0 takes a page out of that and just calls Iron Victory, and so on.
So it does have some things going for it. Like, just it being a warship is good, because Greyjoy can always use their other warship tech.
Yeah, but you have to kneel it for this, too.
I understand, but, you know, Main's Main doesn't care if a warship's kneeling or not.
Mm-hmm.
With the draw, you know, this is Greyjoy's big disadvantage, and now they have a potential source for draw. I can see this getting slotted in one of in some decks.
But yeah, think of when it's going to replace itself. If it fizzles, so if you play it, your opponent reveals a plot card, it fizzles, then it's not replacing itself till the turn after that. I mean,
It's similar to Golden Tooth Mines in that it takes a few rounds to get rolling, I agree.
Well, it's a response, so it can be canceled, it can be not triggered on a Burning Bridges turn.
Yep.
I don't think it's quite as good as
you can
as
forget
GM.
To trigger it. It can
you
be
can forget
out.
To trigger it. Yep. So, I mean, I think it's got a place in some decks, but it would be a lot better if instead of choosing the opponent, it just discarded for each opponent, because I think mill is a little bit stronger in melee.
All right, John, this next card?
Command the Winds. It's an event. It's Deathbound. Any phase, choose a Greyjoy character. That character gets +1 strength until the end of phase. Dominance, kneel a warship location to return Command the Winds from your dead pile to your hand. It's not ever going in one of my decks. Why are you giving me all the awful cards, Alex?
It's really awful.
I'm trying to
see any reason
where I would. Maybe you really need to pump something in Dominance.
This is basically like a Naval Escort was good, but not broken for a long, long time until it eventually was broken. This is kneel and worship for +1 strength, not repeatable. Mm-hmm. And it's a non-setup card, and it's
and if it gets canceled,
bad.
You can't recur it. And
exactly. It's just bad.
Yeah.
Don't try. Don't try this at home. Don't try this anywhere. Just leave it in the binder.
Yeah, I don't know. Can't play this. Sorry. Next.
I guess this is me. This is the first Lannister card. It's Ulf, Son of Umar. Templating things aside, shouldn't it be Ulf, son of... never mind. Anyway, so it's three gold for 3 strength, military power, Bicon. Not that surprising for a clansman, which is in fact his trait. And he has the ability, any phase, discard a card from your hand to give Ulf, son of Umar, any keyword or crest printed on another character in play until the end of the phase. What is that normally going to do? It's going to make it fairly easy to give him stealth if you need it, deadly if you want it, that kind of thing. I think it adds an element of uncertainty when he's participating in a challenge. But he's working in a theme, a clansman theme, that just hasn't come into its own yet. So I'm not sure he's good, but I think he'll make it into a clansman deck once a clansman deck gets good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, giving crests, maybe if you really need to kill the Mad King, or if you wanted to power a blood into a Val, but if you're clansman, you're probably not running Valor. Like,
and you won't be
Valor.
Able to get crests reliably. I think, you know, those are going to show up much less frequently than keywords that you want.
No, but things like no attachment or things like that are pretty easy. Depending on a stealth should be pretty easy if you're using clansman Tyrion. Doesn't he have stealth, or am I making that up?
No, he does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's okay right now. Maybe in a clansman deck. I don't know if he even makes a Clansman deck.
Yeah, if he could give the keyword or the crest to any character in play, that would be bananas.
That would be extreme. Yeah.
Yeah. But as he is, I don't think you're going to see play. Even in Clansman deck, I don't think you're going to see a lot of play.
What did Clansman have besides no attachments and stealth? Are there a couple of deadlies?
They have deadly.
Yeah.
Who has deadly? Burned Men have deadly.
Yeah.
And Timid has renown. So there's some options, but... And
it doesn't have to be one of your characters either.
That's
true. You could give him something like Vigilant or Vengeful, depending on who you're facing.
Or Intimidate, the best keyword in the game. Stalwart. You could totally give him Stalwart.
Well, if you wanted to.
It's almost pain.
If you really wanted to discard a card, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. All right. Next. Moon Brother Harriers. Again, it's a Clansman. 2 cost has 2 icons, an intrigue icon and a military icon. Now, this is pretty big for Clansmen, getting that intrigue icon. It's no attachments except for weapons. It has the following challenge ability. Pay 1 gold to give each participating Clansman character you control +1 strength until end of the challenge. Limit once per challenge. This is a good Clansman.
This is a good Clansman. Maybe not as good as the other 2-cost military intrigue Clansmen, the painted dogs, because those are easier to use in more things. But in a Clansman deck, that effect can be a big strength swing, and you'll need to pay it if you need it, so you decide after he declares his challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And this has the huge advantage of being the first piece of art in this entire CP so far that isn't horrible.
It's got the Warcrest, which is nice. And, you know, like we were saying with Aloofen Apart, the cost is perfect. And I think Aloofen Apart actually slots really well into Clansman-type decks because they have a lot of, like, 4 and 5 costers and a bunch of, like, 2 costers. So That's something for people to try out, probably.
Yeah, I like him.
Yeah, not bad.
All right, Lauren?
Okay, let's see. I'm up next with Vale Encampment.
Yep.
See, this is a 0-cost... non-unique location. It's got the Veil trait. During marshalling, discard Veil Encampment cannot be saved to reduce the cost of the next Clansman card. You play this phase by 1. When you play that card, draw 1 card. I think that's a pretty nice card. Obviously only in a Clansman deck, but 0 cost, good on setup. It's non-unique, so you can play multiples, and you get to draw a card after you use its discounting ability. So I think it's great.
I think it's phenomenal in a Clansman deck.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's an auto-include in that it costs you nothing. It doesn't cost you a card. It can gain you a card in setup, but at worst, it's a free 1-point reduction.
Mm-hmm.
And at best, it gains you a card because it's a 0-cost card in setup, which, again, Aloof and Apart can really use.
I think you run 3 of them in every Clansman deck.
I'm wondering whether it might be possible to run some in non-Clansman deck, and I think probably not, because you're running the Painted Dogs and sometimes Chela and some of these Dark Wings, Dark Words, and the Refugee, which you're not reducing.
Right.
Yeah.
Although you can still cycle the card for free on the Mountain Refugee, so is that enough? Probably not. But it's good enough because it's that free that you start to consider it if you're going to include one of the
other things. Yeah. Just a thin your deck, right?
Yeah.
That might be the best card we've seen so far.
Well, it's the easiest one to slot in anyway. It's a no-brainer, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Back to me with Tyene Sand. This is the Sand Snake theme that they're trying to push. She's a 4-cost for 3-strength intrigue power bicon. She's a Sand Snake and she's a bastard. Response, after you lose a challenge as a defender, set the claim value on your revealed plot card to 2 until the end of the phase. While set, the value cannot be raised or lowered. So the first thing that came to mind is that doing this on something like a Valor turn is really, really mean. The second thing that came to mind is this doesn't work with Ariane, which is a bit of a shame, but you're usually using Ariane to increase your claim from 1 to 2, so I guess that's not that bad that your claim's already 2. At 4 cost for only 3 strength, she's going to be tough to slot in, but claim 2 is nasty, and being able to do it just from losing a challenge, I don't think it's enough, but it's scary enough that I'm willing to reconsider when I see it used against me.
If you lose a challenge, period, I think I could see slots for it. But because it's as the defender, it makes her a little bit less good in my mind. Because then all these high initiative decks may be going, you know, may choose you to go first so that you're stuck with your zero on your Valor turn, for instance, because I just say, okay, well, you go first with your zero claim. You won't lose a challenge as a defender until it doesn't matter.
I mean, she's definitely worse than Ariane, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Ariane has the stealth. She has the crest.
Her claim raise is automatic. You know, you don't have to trigger a response.
Although it's only for one challenge. Well, this could potentially be for three, although it rarely will be.
You have to go second because you need them to go first and hit you and you have to lose. She doesn't push challenges through herself, so even if you raise it, you don't know if you're going to be able to use that effect while you're ahead.
Yeah, exactly. I like the idea of claim two on a Valor turn, but I don't like it enough to put her in anything I've already built.
How would that ever happen? What other zero initiative plots are there?
Shadows and Spiders. Play?
Okay. I don't think I'm playing Shadows and Spiders into your
Valor. Burning Bridges?
But no, this is for when you flip into Valor with Shadows Ariane and somehow keep Tyene's hand on the board, and then they are stupid enough to declare a challenge against you that you can then afford to lose. This is,
you're really stretching. Okay.
That's stretching.
Yeah.
All right, next, then.
She's not helping you with Valor. All right.
No, she's not.
The Red Mountains. It's a one-cost location from Martell. Traits are Dorn, which doesn't do anything right now. In challenges, you can kneel the Red Mountain to choose a Martell character with printed cost 3 or lower. Until the end of phase, that character gains the Sand Snake trait. We just don't have enough support for Sand Snakes to make that good in any way right now.
Well, we do have the Sand Snakes gain power, Sand Snake gain vengeful, all those smaller Sand Snakes from before.
Yeah.
But
those
I don't...
That good.
Yeah, that's always been a pretty gimmicky Slivers deck, and a one-cost unique location isn't going to make that consistent enough, so I don't think that matters. But it looks like they're pushing the Sand Snake theme with cards like the next one we're going to see, which is really interesting. So I'm not going to dismiss this as unplayable because of the
strength. It's hard to evaluate it right now. It would be much easier to do at the end of the chapter pack cycle.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next card.
Okay.
All right, Lauren.
All right. I'm up with a secret mission. This is an event card. It's House Martell only. Challenges: kill a Sand Snake character you control to choose and return up to 3 Shadows cards to Shadows. I think this is a really interesting card. You know, it doesn't specify 3 cards you control. So you could do something like take someone's Jamie with a bunch of Renown on it and put it back into Shadows. I'm not sure that it's going to see play in a lot of decks, but I think that, you know, there's definitely some interesting plays you could make with it.
Yeah, I mean, Martell has Venomous Blade, which has ways of getting back into Shadows by itself, but has Shadows Ariane, who's restricted for a very good reason. Getting her back into Shadows is definitely worth 2 cards, the Sand Snake and that. And then all the knights that we've seen, you know, the versatility of Preston being able to put things back into Shadows is something that everyone's seen by now, and being able to push that further is dangerous. And then being able to go up against your opponent's Tunnels deck and say, oh, well, I guess I'll get 3 unopposed challenges this turn because all of your characters are back in Shadows, is also kind of a fun little side gimmick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could play like a Shadows Thirst deck, gimmick that new location to change things into Sand Snakes to snack, so you can put all your cards back into Shadows so you can get your draw. Silly things like that, maybe.
I think this one's going to be fun. And I think this one will see play, if only in sort of shaggy decks. But I think this one, especially with Shadows Ariane, has potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not always a bad thing in Martell to have to kill a character you control. You can trigger, say, Blood for Blood or Parting Blow off of that.
Turn the Viper on.
Yep.
Next up, me, I guess.
Yes, you.
So I get Titus Blackwood. This is another one of those cases where it's a card that's fueling a theme that doesn't work yet. It's a 4-cost, 3-strength military power bicon with a Warcrest, House Tully, and Lord. He's got 2 keywords, stealth and immune to opponent's events. And a response: after you win a challenge as the defender, move 1 power from the attacking player's house guard to your own. So that's a 2-power swing for winning on defense. I think that cards like Jason Malister from the last chapter pack, which bait your opponent into declaring challenges that you might be able to then win as a defender, are a much better way to start pushing defense as a working theme than this is. There already are some things that reward you for defense. That's always been hard to pull off. I think this card is fine and will slot into that bad deck for now. But I think that if you want to push defense as a theme, it needs to be more cards like Jason Malister that punish your opponent for not declaring certain challenges so that you are given the opportunities to win on defense rather than doubling down on winning on defense.
Yeah, he's a tough slot in Stark, I think, because of, you know, the cost, strength, and icon spread is something that already exists on a lot of Stark cards. So you're looking at replacing another card that you might want to run, like, you know, the Blackfish or Rob for this power gain.
And you don't need the Warcrest. You've got tons of them in Stark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, if you wanted someone to push through challenges instead of stealth, you could get, you know, Deadly on another Cavalry flank that wouldn't kneel in some circumstances.
And wouldn't
and have more base strength. I mean, yeah.
It means opponent defense is good, but less good in the current meta where people aren't Knights of the Hollow Hill.
I'd rather see no attachments.
Yeah, right now.
Well, at least he doesn't have renown, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Right, when they take him and kill him, I won't be losing power.
All right, John?
We have Raven Tree Elite. Cost 6, House Tully, and Army. It's 6 for 6 strength, military, power, icons. It has the Warcrest. It has the no attachment and stealth keywords. It says, each House Tully character you control gains immune to opponent's triggered effects while it is participating in a challenge. I mean, that's a interesting ability if stealth is good. 6 is a lot, though. I mean, I think there's better things that you would pay 6 for in Stark.
Yeah, most of the characters that cost this much have some way of reducing their cost. This one doesn't.
The fleets or the Bolton guy that gets reduced by the number of Boltons. Yeah, this is just a pure 6 cost. Like, outside of Aloof and Apart decks, I don't see this being played at all, really. Except that really bad deck that Alex is putting together on Tully Defense.
But even then, it's somewhat borderline. I mean, that ability is interesting. I wish we'd seen it earlier in the game. There were some times where it mattered. But it's not going to save you from Neil. It's not going to save you from icon stripping. There isn't that much to remove the character from the challenge, so it's sort of an anti-burn tool.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess stops... Yeah, not a whole bunch else. Some locations... Stark locations that'll pull you out of the challenge, things like that, or blank you. But really, it's not doing enough to justify that cost. I think he'd be my 8th favorite army to play in Stark, which says something.
He's not on any of the ones that I would think of. I would rather play the one that gets reduced by kings and queens that doesn't kneel before him. And that one doesn't see a lot of play out of Stark.
All right, looks like I'm up with Seaguard. This is a unique location. It's a stronghold, and it has a challenges ability. Kneel Seaguard to choose a defending character you control. That character gains +2 strength and deadly until the end of the challenge. If you win the challenge, stand Seaguard. So it's another defensive card trying to bolster that Tully River Run theme, I think. It does have the advantage over Frozen Outpost that if you win the challenge, you can use it again. Not sure that it's going to make its way into a ton of decks. You know, deadly on a defending character is nice, I guess. I think it's a lot more useful on an attacking character.
I mean, surprise deadly can be very dangerous, or a deadly that someone can forget about can be very dangerous on attacking characters. Here, the best you're going to get out of this is if your opponent's an idiot, you'll get to use it, you know, twice a turn. To potentially win some challenges that your opponent shouldn't have made in the first place in many of these scenarios. It's also unique, which means that you can't do some of the things you can do with Frozen Moat, Frozen Outpost, relying on them with Borderlands Keep, which is better on defense than this is. So I don't see it outcompeting any of the other fantastic one-cost Stark locations.
Well, the Frozen Outpost is 2-cost, right?
Yes, yeah. But the Frozen Moat is 1.
Is 1 to blank,
To blank, which is arguably better.
And Northland Keep is only 1. And it's non-unique.
It's awesome.
And it's non-unique as well. Yeah. So I don't think this is edging any of those out.
I'd have to agree. And I mean, even Frozen Outpost, at least it stands your characters. So, like, if you're going to do a gimmicky deck where you're, you know, using on Maiden's Bane or something, that's better than Seaguard.
And I think that's the last nice piece of art in this pack as well, because the rest is pretty dubious. So I get Khal Drogo, a obviously Targaryen card, unique four-cost character with three strength, a military, and a power icon. He's deadly. He's a Dothraki lord with a war crest. And basically, if you win a challenge in which he attacks alone, instead of normal claim, you act as if you had a claim one challenge for everything. So they choose a character to die, they randomly discard a card, and they move one power from their house to yours. Big, flashy, and I think worse in a Dothraki deck than the one that gets you more Dothraki. Worse in most other decks than the bouncing one. I think he's one of those cards that gets edged out because of his name. I think he's pretty flashy. I think he may be fun to play around with, and he can...
Yeah, kill characters on power challenges, that's fun.
Yeah, well, and discarding cards from hand is something that Dothraki doesn't do well. So it's all makes a very interesting package. He does have to attack alone, and he only has three strength and deadly. But I just don't see him replacing the Drogos that I'm using.
Yeah, you know, as a character, he has a couple of really easy counters. Brightwater Man-at-Arms, for one. Yeah. I'd love to put Mel's Favor on him and use him against my opponent. He does also have some of the worst art in the chapter pack.
He does look pretty bad.
It's really bad. What's happened? Maybe they're seeing all the good art for 2.0.
this pack really has a lot of duds. And the ones that, you know, are borderline then have other reasons why I might criticize them, like this next card.
Theory? It's a character, Targaryen, Dothraki, handmaiden, ally. It's one for one strength character with a power icon, unique. It has the text, if Eerie would be killed, you may instead attach her to a Dothraki character as a handmaiden attachment with the text. Attached character gains a power icon. It does not yield to attack during power challenges. So, she's actually got a cool effect when she dies.
Mm-hmm.
I can definitely see her slotting into decks. Especially, you know, the abusive Dany decks where you can have this handmaiden attachment so that Dany wouldn't kneel.
Yeah.
Heir to the Iron Throne decks, she fits in well there, you know, getting multiple power challenges, not kneeling with anyone for renown or a kill effect is extremely strong.
I think it really doesn't matter what her text says. She's a one-cost character that then does something when she dies and does something that's better than the character. She's one-cost claim soak. I think this card is phenomenal.
Yeah, she's very easy to put into a deck.
I think too easy. It's not much
you'll
of a
probably
decision
see,
point.
You'll see two of her in a lot of Targ decks.
Yeah, because she's going to get discarded most of the time, so you can definitely play the second copy. I guess you can also save her in attachment format with Young Griff or with the Griff kind of thing, so you could keep her around if you wanted to. Not kneeling to attack is good. It doesn't really matter what challenge. So
she gets the power icon too. You know, you can use her on stuff like Pre to get that extra challenge replacement and a whole bunch of other stuff that could be pretty effective in Targ.
Mm-hmm.
Solid.
I mean, the only drawback she has is that she's an ally and she might get discarded instead of killed. Oh, no.
That's why you're running more than one.
And it's one strength, so your threat from the north will also get her.
Yes, because I'm going to threat and then play her or play her and then threat.
Hey, I have frequently played one cost or one strength characters on my own threat turn.
All right. Next card.
Okay, so we're taking a look at Maya Stone. She's a two-cost, unique, neutral character. House Arryn, bastard. While there is at least one castle plot revealed, Maya Stone gains. Opponents' characters with printed cost 3 or lower cannot be declared alone as attackers. I think it's a really interesting card. We don't have a lot of castle plots yet, but based on the power level that we've seen on the ones that have come out so far, I think... You know, we are definitely going to see some castle plot decks going forward, and I think she makes a great addition to those decks.
Yeah, I think she's costed right for her ability. I've found the castle plots so far difficult to use because you have to sort of sacrifice an effect for a turn, and then you get double the effect the next turn if you're revealing a castle in a one revealed or something like that.
Yeah.
But that delay has made plots that I thought were going to be really, really good a lot harder to slot into decks. But she's a good cost. She's a good, you know, she's got entry power. There are a couple of houses that could really use that. And her ability, when it's on, will make a difference. There's almost no board state where that's going to do nothing. So I think we have to see more castle plots to know for sure. I suspect in the long run, I'll continue to find castle plots hard to use, and so she won't make the cut. But there's that potential.
The meta is so explosive right now. Like, you have to have a very strong start to stay in the game. And castle plots don't provide that right now. So that, I think, is what makes them so hard to use.
But they won't all be hard to use. There's one in this chapter back that isn't. So.
There's one that I'm pretty excited about.
Right. So, John, want to give us the... Oh, no. I guess it's me again. It is. I think we probably screwed up at some point. So we're at the Eyrie, which is a... two-cost location, a House Arryn stronghold. It is immune to plot card effects, huzzah, and has the response, kneel the Eyrie to save a non-army character with printed cost 4 or higher from being killed or discarded from play. Then discard all power on that character. If it wasn't for that, then I'd go, ah, damn, the Red Viper, again. but thankfully, that does tone it down a little bit for the Red Viper.
He's still in play. Instead of dead.
Yeah,
he's still in play instead of dead. I think that saves have gotten worse right now in general. I think that while Harrenhal is around and some other things as well that are out there in the meta, we certainly see that paying 2 gold for a save that can only be used on certain characters and is going to cost you the power on that character and doesn't work on armies, which is most of what you're putting in with Lufin apart. I think this one's a tough sell, but I think it makes sense given the design of the cycle. If they want to push us to use some of these characters, this might eventually slot in a little bit further down the road, but not while Mel's favor is around.
It's strange because I'm actually looking at this card for the first time. And the first thing that hit me was that I want to make a Maester deck now.
With?
Around that Maester power based on the number of chains he has.
Oh, Maester Ebros?
Yeah. Because I could save him. And the only thing that was holding back some of those decks was the fact that he was hard to save.
Well, you could save him fairly easily in Greyjoy.
Well, you could Iron Mine him.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's played best out of Martell.
Yeah, but doesn't all the power go on him? So you're just going to lose it anyway when you save him with the Eyrie.
Yeah, but the thing with him is once he gets a couple challenges through and he's got like 6 chains, you don't care if he loses his power one round because next round you just gain 8 power and a challenge. No,
that's true.
What's the name? Hightower. Leighton Hightower? Is he cost 4 or higher?
He is.
He's the one that protects your
maesters.
Other maesters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He could potentially be worth
saving. He actually cannot be saved.
Yeah.
Cannot be saved. I thought of that. Footprint the Eyrie in 2.5 years.
No, but that might be something to look into just for fun. Kind of like a delayed rush deck.
Mm-hmm. I think it'll be fun. I don't think it'll be all that good.
Well, if they just unrestrict the Conclave, it would be awesome.
Yep.
Then we'd all be playing Maesters.
We would indeed.
No, we wouldn't, because Barrow would just steal them. Oh, you got 6 chains on him? I'll take him.
Okay, unrestrict Tin Link then.
No.
All right. What do we have next? We have...
Taken Captive. The castle plot. So this is obviously the one you were referring to. It has the text, after this plot is placed in your used pile, choose an opponent's character with printed cost 3 or lower. Take control of that character until a new plot is placed in your used pile. What I was thinking was we definitely needed more ability to steal our opponent's characters. So this is, you know, in the right design direction.
I was thinking that.
Damn you, Barra.
What's missing here, though, is actually, the House Baratheon only.
Yeah.
text, which I'm sure they'll errata soon.
Please, we don't need people to hate us any more than they do right now. Does hit Danny, which is great.
I can also see this being particularly deadly with Ariane. Again, you reveal this as your plot, and then as you enter challenges phase, you take one of his characters, and you've thrown off his calculations. So, I mean, one of the drawbacks of these castle plots is your opponent sees them coming and says, okay, next turn I'm going to have lost this character, probably. So I want to play this plot, the blank's characters, or, you know, whatever it is. But if you can surprise flip out of taken captive into something else, you can potentially do some serious damage with this. So I think that that's another avenue of attack.
This is good, obviously. I mean, the delayed piece, again, might pose a little bit of problems, but if people are going to early games have more than one or two, three cost characters, and taking one of them the next round, especially if you can get a high claim plot out, could be very effective. So,
yeah, there's also nice combos with other plots. So, for example, you know, you take control of another person's character, and then the next turn you play Wildfire. Yeah, or March.
Actually, Lauren, I'm really glad you brought that up, because that's a timing question I've gotten a lot, and it doesn't work. You can't use Wildfire or Marched in any way with Taken Captive. It's a tricky plot and a tricky timing. So all the castle plots work the same way in that they have a passive that says after it is moved to the use pile or whatever it says. And so that means that you wait until after all when revealed before that happens. But Taken Captive, its passive has a lasting effect, so the duration lasts until you reveal a new plot, which is actually indicating a constant. So the expiry of that effect will happen before you resolve when revealed on the next plot.
Yep.
All right, and it makes no sense at all that with 20 cards we wind and three people, we wind up back at Lauren. so clearly we skipped somewhere. But Lauren, what do you think of this next one?
Well, Fallen from Favor. So this plot is a 4 gold, 6 initiative, 2 claim. It's a castle plot, and after this plot is placed in your use pile, choose one character you control and return it to the bottom of its owner's deck. Cannot be saved. So I think this plot is great because it actually gets around the disadvantage of the castle plot by providing you with an advantage the turn that you reveal it. The 4/6/2 stats are amazing, and really, you know, for certain houses, choosing a character you control and returning it to the bottom of your deck is, you know, an advantage, not a disadvantage. So I think it's very playable, and, you know, we're going to see it a lot going forward.
I think you're right in saying that this is one of those castle plots that's easy to use. Something like Nia is easy because you're getting the effect now and you're getting the drawback later, which works backwards to these other castle plots. People have said that it's an auto-include or that it's stupidly powerful. I mean, retaliation exists. It's not restricted anymore. And you can certainly see the pluses and minus between these two. The ability to potentially go first versus the lower initiative, the fact that this one has a drawback, that kind of stuff. I think this drawback will hit people more often than they think. Especially since when you flip this, your opponent goes, okay, next turn I'm flipping March to the Wall, you're losing 2 characters.
Sure.
Because they planned for that. So I think that people are too dismissive of the drawback, but it's still the easiest castle plot to play.
It's a great closer. I mean,
yeah,
there's no drawback if you end the game on that round.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it doesn't need to be said that, you know, there's plenty of cards that benefit from this. You've got stuff like Dale and the new Kevin that have responses upon leaving play. And then you have cards like Eris Okart and Dale and Maester Cresson that have effects when they come into play. So I think it's a great card.
Yeah, I think it's a very strong plot as well.
Mm-hmm. I think in Barra NA you'll definitely see it getting slotted in for one of the plots.
What is it best compared to besides Retaliation? I mean, there's also Men of Pride, which has the lower initiative. And
Twist of Fate.
Effect, and then Twist of Fate, which is dangerous.
It's much better than Twist of Fate, I think.
Well, John likes Twist of Fate, but
sometimes
more guts than I do. So, yeah, I think that the people who are saying that it's grossly overpowered are dismissive of the fact that there already are some Clan 2 plots that you may not well be playing at the moment, that Men of Pride and Retaliation can both do the same thing to some extent. So
yeah, but the combination of the two claim and almost certainly being able to go first if you want to, because, I mean, 6 initiative does...
In this meta, I don't think 6 initiative gets you going first, though.
You don't think so?
In this meta? No, I'm not really convinced it does. I think there are enough of those decks running Bay of Ice that are running mostly 6 and higher with the Bay of Ice, like the Targ Black Sails that I was running, that a lot of decks, every Targ deck practically is opening with an 8 initiative plot, and therefore is tempted to run Bay of Ice and some high initiative modules. A lot of Greyjoy is also tempted to do the same. I don't think 6 is a guarantee. I think you can slot that 6 into those decks. So
there's still a lot of people running Rivers, and most of those have very low initiative.
That's true. It does all
Rivers. Along with all the city plots. So, you know, I think it's probably matchup dependent, but...
So overall, any points about this chapter pack? I definitely wanted to say that I think the art is hideous. I think it's odd that we only got one flavor quote. And I think that overall, it's got a lot of interesting cards or powerful cards, not a lot of them that are both, which is a difference from the last CP, which I think had things like Greenseer's Ravens, Siege Preparations, Alufin Apart, Dosh Kaleen, all of which I thought were both interesting and potentially powerful. So here it seems to have split the two into either interesting or powerful. With the exception of Secrets Schemes, I think that one is both interesting and very powerful.
I mean, I'm interested in seeing how they're going to flush out some of these themes that they're pointing to, like the Rainbow Guard, the Clansmen, the Sand Snakes, even Tully, I guess.
your enthusiasm.
Yeah, but I think it's, just on the subject of traits, I think it's really funny that they picked Dithraki as the theme that they needed to flesh out for Targaryen, which I think Dithraki has already been, you know, a pretty successful deck type for Targaryen, and then they pick something like Tully or Rainbow Guard for the other houses that are much more tier 2. Yeah. So I think we're going to see some really powerful Targaryen decks coming up.
And I like how the theme that they fleshed out for Greyjoy is ..
Oh, good point.
It's Ironborn. They're fleshing out the Ironborn.
That's right. All those mechanics. Yeah, the next chapter pack is already on the boat. If it moves as fast, we might wind up with a CP review again very, very shortly.
Well, let's just make regionals and Gen Con more interesting, right?
All 6 chapter packs out, before Gen Con.
Oh, I was kind of hoping we would have Gen Con without Sky Cells, but that might not happen at this rate.
Well, who knows what will be released between now and then. Maybe all your characters will be above cost 3, and you won't ever have to worry about Sky Cells. You'll be running a deck that only sets up 2 cards. It'll be great. Everyone will be running March to the Wall as their openers.
So, Lauren, thanks so much for doing this chapter pack review with us. It was great to have you on the show.
Casting our minds back almost exactly a year, on our second episode, we had some bright-eyed, bushy-tailed fellow from Chicago come tell us about his tournament. And it's happening again. Are you still bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, Doug?
Probably not as bright-eyed. I just had a kid, so I think you guys know how that goes. Yes.
I understand that. You know, I got 4.
Yeah, this is my second now, so.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
So what brings you to the cast today?
We are to talk about the Windy City Winter Cup.
Did you guys do that on purpose?
It was a little bit, you know, because... WCWC. I didn't try to create a tongue twister, but that is what happened.
So when is this tournament?
It's going to be February 7th, the week after the Super Bowl.
That's right. So this will be this weekend from the day this cast airs, from Monday. And so this is your official store championship, in addition to getting this moniker, right?
Actually, no, this is not the store championship.
Oh, this is not the store championship.
Well, no, this is just us putting on our own tournament with our own unique prize support. The store championship for Chicago will be in late March.
I love unique prize support. Tell me about it.
Yeah, the prize support is actually probably the coolest thing. To start, the initial idea that we all had that's probably started all of this was a traveling trophy. So, and this thing is huge. It's about 18 inches tall, and it's a cup that is got a 8-inch diameter. And the whole idea was that the winner could drink out of it at the end.
Both winning tournaments and drinking are things I enjoy.
Exactly. Yeah. And the best part is we'll be playing in a bar.
Oh, so not at Dice Dojo.
No. Dice Dojo will be – well, there is actually three separate events. The Melee will actually be at my house on Friday, and the Joust will be at the bar in the suburbs of Chicago on Saturday, and then the Draft will be at Dice Dojo on Sunday.
Cool.
And so this traveling cup then travels with the winner, and he has to come back next year, otherwise you guys are out of here.
Yeah, we discussed that. That was a risk we had to take. But they'll get the cup when they win, and then they'll keep it until Gen Con, because we figured that's, you know, most of the guys coming should probably go to Gen Con. Mm-hmm. And then at Gen Con, it'll come back to me, and I'll make sure everyone's names get put on there, all three winners. And then we do it again.
So nice. Which of the winners gets to keep the cup?
Just the Joust.
We'll obviously link the details for the... There's a website or a Facebook group, I think.
There is a Facebook group, and there's a there's like a little flyer that I put up on both of the Game of Thrones websites.
Yeah, so it also went up already on our Beyond the Wall 2 weeks ago. It went up. So thank you, Doug, for coming on and for promoting this, for bringing back the cycle from a year ago, our second episode a year ago, now second episode of season 2. You're a regular. You got to plan something big for next year around this time.
Yeah, that's my hope. Thanks for having me.
All right, we're joined by Laplante, a player you should have heard of, because who has won the Swedish championships. He did very well at Worlds. 2 weeks later, he came second at Stalik. You've been all over the place.
Well, yeah, I've been moving along a lot this year, and I'm really happy about this. I've been in a lot of places.
Yeah, I remember taking a sort of double take while you were speaking to Aoria in Spanish, wearing a French flag, and with Swedish bracelets.
Yeah, because... As I am the Swedish champion, I need to show it. I was at Worlds as the Swedish champion, so my fellow Swedish people was waiting for me, so I got to be there. But as I'm also French, my flag is here, like every tournament. And yeah, as I am Colombian too, I can speak Spanish fluently. So.
Wow. You're like Alexi. So many languages.
That's it.
So what brings you here today?
I'm here to tell you about a coming tournament, Field of Fire, in Nantes. And it will take place 7 and 8 of February. It's going to be huge.
Yeah, so far we've already... Every time you guys have posted a spoiler for some of the custom fan cards, I've posted it straight to our Facebook group because they've been phenomenal. They look better than anything we've done, and we were really pleased with what we've done.
Yeah, we are very lucky because... Tass, one of the main organizers of the tournament, is really skilled, and he got a lot of contacts to have some illustrators to get really good illustrations. And so those fan cards are so good and so beautiful.
Tass is a name that most people should be familiar with because he's in charge of the Octagon module now, right?
Yeah. He's in charge of the Octagon module right now, and he's doing quite a good job, I think.
Yeah, I noticed there was a Field of Fire advertisement, which I bet was important.
That's right. That was quite sneaky.
Yeah.
So this is officially a store championship, right?
Yeah.
But unofficially, it's much more than that.
Yeah. Unofficially, we wanted to make it the first European event of the year. And international, because we would like to have some people from far away from Europe, but that's harder. And, we wanted to make this event as big as possible. In France, we have two big tournaments outside of Tour Championship, Regionals and Opens. We got also the French Championship and the Tony of the End. And so we wanted to have one more event that big because we love those events. We love the community all around the world. And so we wanted to share something else and have three big events. One in the beginning of the year, one in the middle with the French Championship, and one in the last part of the year in October, the Tony of the End. So that's the idea, and the event is going to be huge too. We are waiting around 60 players. I think just like the past year, the biggest Tour Championship in the world.
Yeah, I think that's very likely.
Yeah, last year we have been doing an event in the same idea. We called it the Western Battles. and it was already huge, and this year is going to be even better. So I'm quite happy with that, and I'm also quite happy that we're going out of what is expected for Star Championship. We make it bigger, and I think it's cool to show people that if they want to make something big, they can do it. They can do it.
John, ever get the feeling we're on the wrong side of the ocean?
I feel that all the time, Alex.
Well, it sounds
they build better decks over there. They don't.
It sounds like you guys have quite the weekend planned. This is going to be, as usual, both a melee and a joust over the 2 days. It's going to be huge. It's going to have those amazing art cards. Anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, please, people all around the world, come. Just come in every tournament you can. Make as much as travel as you can. You will meet a lot of people, a lot of great people. Istariel, for example, and John, was a great meeting we had in the world. And you will make friends all over the world. And that's something way bigger than just a game. That's really cool. I know I can go now in London, Madrid, Sweden, and Poland, and lots of countries. If I want to go there and rest some days, I can do it, and I will have people that I enjoy to see in all those countries. So you can meet a lot of people, just do it.
Excellent.
I have a sign up for it.
You don't want to now.
He decided he doesn't know what to say now. He's like, I want to talk. All right.
We can use this as last time.
No.
Every time now.
I choose to think of it as how sad people are that we're ending an episode.
It's done.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
It's also interesting because it says, who cannot... Oh, no, any opponent who does not. Okay, never mind. Yeah, I was reading that. Okay, I'll cut that stupidity out. This is how I make myself sound smart. Cutting out all the stupid bits.
Good editing.